Now entering Nerdist.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Today We Learned. My name is Razzle. How are you guys doing today, this weekend? How was your weekend? Did you have a good weekend? What'd you do? Everything fun? Cool. I love it. I like it. Welcome back. This is a really great episode. This is a fun episode. Good conversation. My buddy David Huntsberger joins us. He's a very funny comic and podcast host and comedian and writer and all around awesome dude. All around righteous dude. And we have some fun chats. We get into the history of the superhero tights. Who was the first superhero to wear tights? We get into some talk about Reno, Nevada and the origins of Culver City and who helped Star Trek make it to the small screen. We got to talk a lot of fun things on this show, this episode. It's a really great episode, really fun conversations. So we'll just let you guys listen to that, and you guys can enjoy hearing my voice some more, and enjoy hearing and meeting David. So without further ado, today we learned number 143 with David Huntsberger.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Today. That was I'm going to keep that because, but I was like, I stopped halfway through, David, because it was like very much like morning radio to me. I don't know, or something like that, or like a old 80, like a cartoon. It was very Ren and Stimpy cartoon, like a game show and a Ren and Stimpy cartoon. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Today We Learned. As usual, my name is Razzle. We got a really great show today, a really great guest. I mean, I shouldn't say we got a really great show yet because it's just starting, so it could actually falter. But I have a feeling it's going to be really, really fun show because this is a very good, fun acquaintance of mine. We need to hang out more, for one, because we've hung out. You've done my other podcast years ago, the Pick and Favorites. And then we've hung out at like holiday parties for those things. And we've always, you've always been fun to hang out with and just fuck around with and make jokes with. So, yeah, side note, like we should, I don't know, hang out or do something. But ladies and gentlemen, this is a hey. Do you like? Hey, do you want to be my friend, David? ladies and gentlemen, you've seen him on Sci-Fi. You've seen him on Comedy Central. You've seen him all over. He's a really funny dude. He's got a couple podcasts of his own. David Huntsberger.
Hello.
You had a couple. Do you still have podcasts? Do you still have the Professor Blastoff?
I do one. No, Professor Blastoff ended about a year ago. And then now I do one called Space Cave, which is just one-on-one, like me sitting down and having beers with real smart folks. And so it just kind of...
That's awesome.
Trying to figure out, you know, the universe or what just what they know or things, that sort of thing. I always like that. I like, you know, when you, like you were saying, like when we hung out at holiday parties, you get to know someone a little bit. Yeah. But like the things that they know, they always kind of bubble up to the surface and not just become like the only thing they talk about. It kind of shapes how they reference the rest of the world. You know, because you can, if you're into superheroes, you might go, oh, well, in this episode of this, they reference this parallel universe theory. And then that got me thinking about, so like that becomes your conduit to process where we live, how we exist. And so the podcast I do is really great for that because people that are knowledgeable about physics or chemistry or anything else, like they have a good working knowledge of like, well, this is how, you know, the universe potentially formed and blah, 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 blah. So I like that. I think it's probably similar in this where like what we learned, like learning stuff.
Exactly. Like this show is fun because it tends to be tangential and random facts and trivia, but it's also like you will have guests who they're awesome guests, but then it's like they know they'll bring up, oh, here's a thing speaking of what we're talking about now, this is this and this. And it's like, it's always interesting to know to just, people are such wealths of knowledge. We're such sponges, and people are so individualized in what they pick up and what their interests are.
Yeah.
And it blows my mind. Like, people interest me so much in the sense that people are so individualized in how much they know, or they could be normal. Like, you could think they're a normal person, but they're like super intelligent, or not saying that normal people aren't intelligent, but
right. And how we define intelligence is so interesting too. Is it are you good at trivia? Like that, a lot of people can, oh, that's a very tangible thing.
Yeah.
Good. But other people, you'd be like, that person's really smart. It might just be how they think about things.
Exactly.
Or they might have a bunch of degrees. Or it really depends on like how we quantify. Like that person is intelligent. I think it's all those things you just said, like being spongy and kind of curious and retaining Little bits of knowledge, I suppose.
Yeah. Like, real quick, I'm going to – speaking of what we're exactly talking about, this is why statues have small dicks. so most of these – like, you see, like, Michelangelo and all these main famous human statues, you know, the dude's junk's always kind of small.
Yeah.
And that's because back in those days, like, if you had large, you know, massive dicks, you were looked at as, like, a loon or, like, a immature, like, fool type of a thing. And they always thought, like, the wise men and the strong and – those types of like men you want to aspire to be, like the smaller the dick, the more masculine.
That was probably the first glimpse into intellect outsmarting people. It's like, oh, well, that the women seem to be enjoying having sex with those guys more. And then the smart guys were like, you know.
The artists are like,
I've got one of those tiny dicks. And if I could just speak up here for a minute, that's really and they convinced everyone. And everyone's like, this guy's got a good point.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's how you do it. Artists have always been influencing the way. so we like to start off each episode with a guest providing a fact about themselves or something they learned recently or both. And I told you this yesterday. So what do you got for
I had a hard time with it because like it's one of those things you suddenly start going, And then you feel like you're never going to pick the right thing.
Yeah.
Like, I certainly learned something way more interesting than this, and there's certainly a fact or a tidbit about myself that I'm going to, after the fact, a friend of mine will go, oh, did you tell this thing? And I'll go, oh, I never remember that. I never think of that.
The shoes. Oh, yeah, about the shoes.
So I thought the thing I learned recently was from a documentary on Netflix that I just thought was kind of interesting. I mean, there are endless things we learn daily
Netflix doesn't have many documentaries at all.
they're hard to find. But I thought it was a good glimpse into like a community banding together and sort of fighting off bigotry and racism and hate in a place where you might not think that would exist, in this place called Leaf, North Dakota. It was a community of like 24 people just quietly living there. And one of those places when if you were to drive through it somehow, you'd go, how the hell is there an economy here? How do these people make money? What do they do? And yet, as you watch a documentary, you're like, oh, okay, that guy's a farmer. That guy drives 20 miles into a different town to work. That person is the sheriff, or on and on. So they just have this tiny little town, and it looks like B-roll. Or they say it in that, like, sort of B-roll from The Walking Dead. Just a lot of junk and things piled up from when the town...
As of 2010, the population of Leith, North Dakota... was 16.
I think in the documentary they reference the number 24.
Okay.
And there's a person in it, this guy and his wife, they're like, oh, we joked that when we moved here we brought up the population by like 25% because they had a few kids, and so like maybe they are what brought it up to 24. Wow. But this guy named Craig Cobb, who is a figurehead in the like Aryan Nation and white supremacy and all this crap, moved there and started buying up property and was on message boards trying to get people to move there to establish a whites-only culture. So he was convinced, like, there's only 24 people. Like, if we get a majority here, it won't take that many of us. We can vote and take over this town.
And this was recent. This was in 2012. This is 4 years ago this guy was trying to do this.
Yeah. And they're just all these great characters in the documentary who are like, fuck this, you know, just like, I haven't had any real, like, this one guy goes, I haven't had a fire in my belly in a long time, but I am fired up. And so he started filming everything. There was one black guy in the town, which that sounds like, well, of course, but it's he was from, God, where's he from? Met his wife in like Kansas or something, and she was saying, I'm from Leith, I want to move back. And he goes, okay, I'll go. So he's integrated into the town. Everyone loves each other. It seems like a very cool community of 24 people that really need each other. It's kind of one of those weird things where you're like, oh, we're in this big city and everyone says the same thing about LA. Like, it's kind of a giant lonely place.
Yeah.
You know, you see your friends twice a year. You go, oh man, you only live 3 miles from me. Like, well, that might as well be 300 miles.
Yeah.
And in Leith, it's not like that. It's like they all see each other all the time. They meet, they gather, they get together. So this guy happens to be black, but he more is just – it's irrelevant. Like, he's part of their town. And so it's weird to think in a place like North Dakota, like, yeah, his race has virtually nothing to do with it until this asshole shows up. And now he's like a threat to them. Yeah. So all these people from around the state and a bunch of Native Americans show up and like protest them and are yelling like, go home, you racists, go home, you fucking Aryans. And they're hanging all these like, you know, swastika flags and the National Socialist Movement or whatever. There's some group based out of Detroit that – They show up and they're very knowledgeable about rights and laws and, like, you know, so they behave in these obnoxious ways. They're like, hey, we just want to be a group just like, the, you know, the NAACP, or that's all we are. We're just a group of white people. So, and then you see them, you know, Sieg Heiling and all this shit. And so you just, you can't help but just utterly hate them and root for this little town of Leith. And then, so there's a website, leithnd.com, and I went there to see, like, what happened? How did things turn out? And it just says peace. So, like, they drove this dude out by, like, using – well, really, he was walking through the town with a gun and, like, threatening people. So they got him arrested via a felony, which is great because, like, there's a woman holding a camera because they're very big on that. Like, know your rights. You can film anything. We have the right to assemble here, and we have the right. And he'd go look up people's personal information, and there was one guy whose daughter had been murdered, and he'll show up with, like, a laptop and be like, is this your daughter? Is this your daughter that was killed? Is this your address? Is this your wife's address? Is this her telephone number? Like, not threatening, but just clearly saying without,
antagonizing,
like,
so he can use
– yeah,
can,
yeah.
Like,
and in such an intimidating, obnoxious, just childish way, and go, I didn't threaten anyone. I just happened to show them information and ask if it was correct. Like, they know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're proving that you know, you know, information about them. And so he, you know, he's doing that, all that shit. And but on her camera, they actually use her footage in the documentary. It's pretty funny because they think they're being so, like, these are your rights. You can film anything. Do you know? Let me do all the talking. And the cops show up and he goes, remember, let me do all the talking. And the cops go, we're arresting you. He goes, okay. It's like the end of it. And then, the documentary kind of ends where you don't know where he's going to go or what he's going to do. And then you see the people of Leith kind of getting back to their lives and stuff. But it's great. At one point, you know, they ask the black guy, like, are you going to stay? He goes, yeah. And they're, are you scared? He's like, no, this is my home. Like, he doesn't have a right to come here and threaten me. And then you're just like, oh, come on, Leith. Beat this guy.
That's, you know what? That almost sounds like that could be like a movie.
Oh, it's great,
do you know what I mean? Like, that could be like one of those, like Walking Tall type of movies where it's like, you know, the guy's got to move. The guy moves back into town, you know, to be with his family, and he just wants to be happy. You know, Denzel Washington moves back into town,
but he's got to cash.
And then all of a sudden, this guy comes in. This other guy moves into town and doesn't like him and wants to, like, cause turmoil. But they're doing everything by the law. And it's a small town.
It's kind of like Roadhouse. Like,
yeah. You know,
Dalton has this. Like,
very much, yeah.
It's almost like the opposite, though, because Roadhouse is not a quiet town. He moves into turmoil and then sort of fights against it. Yeah, I think there's something
But
there.
It's like the other guy was kind of like the bet. You know what I mean? Like, you're trying to, you're buying up, you're forcing your muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And you're, you know.
Yeah,
there's definitely something there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's
even
a quintessential
indie,
bad guy. I think if you did it as a movie, people are like, no one's this bad, like this sinister
and
evil.
But you know what you do? You say, based on a true story.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's all you need is based on a true story.
Someone is probably working on some version of it right now because it has all the...
Everything.
It's great. And all the citizens of North Dakota coming there.
You have the two main characters be the black dude who just moved back. And then you have like a Nick Cage... Mud, if you've seen Mud, was really good. No, Mud was
Matthew McConaughey.
Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
But there was another one where Nick Cage was kind of like, it was very similar.
Oh, where he grabs a snake or something like that?
Was it called
Joe?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah,
Joe.
I haven't seen that.
That was pretty good, too. But you have him as, like, you have one of those guys as, like, the dad whose daughter got murdered.
Yeah.
And they just want to do their thing. They support their town. They've been there their entire lives. And then this schlub moves in and starts trying to take over. And they do things by the law, but it's like...
Yeah.
That's a movie right there.
It is, because you got to outsmart them. Because you're going, damn it, we don't really have legal cause here.
Yeah.
This guy, as shitty as it is, he knows all of his, like, his rights. He knows the constitutional rights pretty well. So we got to outsmart him, and we got to really stick it to him.
Yeah.
And there's a character in the movie who's so great where, like, his grandfather was, like, the original mayor. And then they went for a while with, like, I think not having a mayor. And then the county put a mandate out, so, like, you have to have a mayor. So it just reverted to him. He's like, so I got sort of grandfathered into this. But he's just, like, a simple dude who farms and ranches and raises a family. And he's so sweet because he goes – in the documentary, he goes, oh, I haven't really been out too much or seen much of the world other than here. And so, honestly, I didn't even know what a white supremacist was. It's so great. This guy that's just like – That is like, it's so earnest. It's so like, everyone probably just would drive by that place and be like, boof, that's a bunch of racist, like Bible thumping. And instead it's like, no, we're very simple people. We're good to each other. You know, we just want everyone to live
in Sesame Street. Like, it's just a small one street town.
Yeah, yeah. It was really cool. So I liked that aspect, and I hope Leith has stayed after that dude left uninhibited.
So this Paul his real name is Paul Craig Cobb.
Oh, okay.
Okay. He's an American Canadian white nationalist, white separatist, neo-Nazi, anti-Semite, mm-hmm. a Holocaust denier. Cobb is known for his movement to dominate the city of Leith, North Dakota, with other white supremacists. Okay. Mm-hmm. He has since moved out of there, right? He was released. The Welcome to Leith is the documentary you probably watched, right?
Yep. Yeah.
He was during the 2013 airing of the Trisha Goddard Show, whatever that is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is great. So this is in
Cobb,
the documentary.
This is in it?
Yeah, yeah.
Cobb has been revealed as part African-American.
Sub-Saharan African. 14% of his DNA comes from there. So she gets up after reading that. And the audience is so great. It's like a very mixed audience. So, you know, like in a stand-up special, and they do kind of like a racist joke, and then they show, like, here's someone who's laughing at that joke. You're just going to have to take our word for it. We certainly didn't get some footage earlier and cut this.
We didn't add them laughing at a different joke.
Yeah, yeah. And so they show the audience just all like high-fiving each other and cracking up. And she stands up and like fist bumps him like, what's up, bro? What's that? Like, it's so – he's just sitting there like, no, no, no. It was really great. Like just he is – I mean, he's been – and at the end, he kind of gets humanized a little bit when he's in prison. He shaves his beard and gets a haircut and kind of just weirdly breaks down like – I was raised this way. I have a mild form of Asperger's, I would imagine, that's on the autism scale. And he just goes through like his life and kind of like, oh, and to some degree, he makes sense. And there's a weirdly, like a part of you where like, oh, this guy, maybe he's kind of like the comedian in Watchmen.
Yeah.
Where he just recognized like the world is chaos and fuck it. Like I want to add to it and I just want to be a pest. And I think he just chose the dark side in that capacity. And like, I think that his hate and all these ridiculous things come from a place of just like just trying to be a fly buzzing around annoying people.
Yeah. That's interesting. Do you know what I mean? Like that's an interesting because there are people like that where it's like they're raised in such a way where it's like all they know is like trying to spark fire or antagonize. Like,
yeah.
They don't know how to just live and like accept.
Yeah. I mean, I have hobbies and shit that I like, but I can't imagine like getting so into something that it, you know, like someone asked that in the documentary, like, can you imagine just sitting there and hating everyone all day? Like, that's his whole
life. Strenuous.
It's so
it's
exhausting.
Strenuous to be so exhausting.
Yeah. And that you're willing to like be online all day and communicating with all these people. At one point, he's like inviting federally incarcerated Aryans to move there. Like, come on out. Once you get out of prison, move here. Come here. Like, he really
wants.
What
are they going to say, guy?
Yeah, you know what I mean? No, like, he bought a bunch of properties.
Yeah, but they got to build houses.
So he bought all these properties, and some of them had houses on them. And that's – so they did this great thing where they pass – when he's out of town, they have a vote, a city vote. Like, we want to pass an ordinance where all of your homes have to have running water because none of his do.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
It's really great. So they like they get his house condemned within 30 days, and then they're able to like bulldoze it over.
That's
and,
smart. That's in the movie. That's the like the law. They hurry up into the town hall.
Yeah, yeah. So you just see these people, and when in the beginning, you're like, they're not going to figure it out. There's no way. They just seem too nice, and they like they're not prepared for this. Like the movie we would make, like our simple townsfolk. They.
I'm whispering, let's do this.
I'm into it.
I'm whispering, let's do this.
Absolutely. We're passing secret notes. Like we're already finalizing the rights to it.
You're from Reno. You were born in Reno, Nevada.
Yeah.
What was that like?
I was born in St. Mary's Hospital. I spent my first 3 years on a ranch like 50 miles north of Reno. So I don't remember much of that. And then I kind of... we lived in Sparks for a little bit, and then we moved to this trailer, kind of, not trailer park, but it was a lot of mobile homes. They were all trailers, but it didn't seem like a trailer park. It seemed like a community. We had streets and stuff like that. And then I lived there till I was about six. And then, what it was like to live there was kind of different via age, via certain, like, cause I feel like in weird ways I can totally relate to a trailer park. Like, oh yeah, all my friends live there. Like I spent a few years doing that, like going over and knocking on those doors that really rattle when you bang on them and walking up decks that are just like a collection of cinder blocks and wood and things like, you know, a lot of chicken wire fences. And then we moved to a house, and that's where I lived there for like all the way up until high school. And then I moved to the south end of town and lived on a different ranch with my dad there through high school. And then I left. And then so like I've been out of Reno pretty much as long as I lived there, which is kind of strange. It's Nevada as a whole. So I did Mark Maron's podcast. I did okay. WTF. And he asked me about Reno or just Nevada in general. A lot of people pronounce it Nevada, and that always draws the ire of Nevada, which I'm one of those people too. Like, it's Nevada. And, but he asked me about Reno. He goes, before you answer, I've always thought of it as a morally bankrupt place. I go, and then I kind of defend Reno a little bit, like, well, I could see if you just pass through, you'd think that, but it's artsy and kind of cool, and you know, you've got the mountains and everything like a place like, you know, Denver would have.
Yeah.
Reno really has. I mean, there's a river that runs right through downtown. There's mountains just 10 minutes away, and there's skiing and kayaking and fishing, and it's really great. But here, this to me sums up Reno and maybe even Nevada in general. Like, someone heard that interview and wrote an article about it, like Nevada-born comedian on Mark Maron's podcast. But that wasn't what it was about. It was about that Mark Maron had sort of a slandered Reno. It wasn't about like, hey, this guy
that's
from. It wasn't about that at all. And that's kind of Reno. Like, we're not really, we don't. If you look at states and famous people by states, we have virtually no one. Like, Jimmy Kimmel is from Vegas. There are a couple other people, but you know, like Mississippi has 1,000 famous people. Like, you know, Oprah's from there, and Elvis. Ohio obviously has a ton of people. So many states do. Nevada does not have a bunch. And I think part of it is from that attitude. It's like, we're not all that proud of when someone goes out and does something. We're kind of like, I think the sentiment is like, what'd they say about Reno? That son of a bitch. Like, wait, there was a positive side too. There was someone from Nevada that was there. Yeah. But it really didn't focus on that. And I thought that kind of in a weird way, sort of not crystallize it, but it definitely gives a glimpse. And like that to me is kind of Nevada. Like, you leaving? You think you're better than me? Something like that. And yeah. I don't mean to disparage Nevada because I love it.
Well, I mean, it's the biggest little city in the world, mm-hmm. as they say. It's Reno is the third most populous city in Nevada.
What's number two?
Number two is, let's see if there's not. Oh, there's not a link for me to click.
Oh, that's really strange.
Paradise, maybe?
Paradise, Nevada?
I don't know. Let's see.
Oh, there might be some little place outside.
Oh, wait. No, here we go. I should have finished reading the sentence here. is the third most populous city in the state after Las Vegas and Henderson.
Oh, okay. Well, Henderson I include as like part of Vegas, isn't it? Okay. So right down there next to. But that, okay, that makes sense.
Now,
so.
you lived in Sparks, Nevada for a little bit, right?
Son of a bitch. I'm
you
leaving.
Son of a bitch. Sparks is a city in Washoe County.
Washoe
County. It was founded in 1904 mm-hmm. and incorporated in 1905. I always like having different people on the show because, I like to find out where they're from. And cities interest me.
Really? Because,
like, cities, like, as far as I know, every city's been around right now.
Uh-huh.
But at one point, cities were new things.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we're going to start a city.
Yeah.
Like, some cities are only like 80 years old. Some cities are 50 years old. And that's still interesting to me because it's like, you got to get people together mm-hmm. and think, yeah, we're going to start our own little city.
I read about this guy. Oh, he's changing the name of the town. He like petitioned it because he owns it. It was one of those towns that is just like virtually a ghost town.
Yeah.
But it had a springs or something that would draw a few tourists in. And so he owned enough stuff there that now he owns a town. And you think like, well, then what are your ambitions? Do you want to build it up so that you have a town that's named after you? Or because like, and then I think about this, like here in Los Angeles, lots of things are named Culver. And I don't think any of us know who in the hell Culver was. It's so strange. Like, that person made a huge impact on the world. And none of us are referencing like, well, it's like Culver said, we know nothing about that person.
You're absolutely right. There's like, you have street names after like presidents and things like that.
Yeah.
But there are cities that have a suffix or a name where it's like, who is that?
I'm right.
Because I live in Culver City. Oh, here we go. Ahaha. This is why I love the show. Because I live in Palms near Culver City.
Okay.
But
I've lived there. I lived in Venice and Culver City and then kind of stayed with a friend for a bunch in the Palms.
Yeah, that's where I live, okay. Palms. I live like by Motor in Venice. Don't come stalk me. I'm not going to give you my address. But it's on blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
The Culver City was it's been around since like the 1920s. It's prior to that, but since the 20s, it's been a significant center for motion picture. It's like where a Hughes Aircraft Company was and all that. But the city was named after its founder, Harry Culver.
And who's ever heard of Harry Culver?
I don't know. Harry Culver was a real estate developer and promoter. He's a promoter, too. Hey, do you guys want to buy a house? But I'll give you a free bottle. I'll give you a bottle service if you buy this house over. If you buy this plot of land. He was born in Milford, Nebraska, the middle child of five of Jacob and Ada Culver, who lived on a farm. At age 18, he enlisted in the Spanish-American War. Culver studied business at the University of Nebraska for 3 years. From 1901 to 1904, he worked in the Philippines in the mercantile business, and as a reporter for the Manila Times.
Isn't that crazy that 1904 Culver City wasn't around yet? It seems like it would be much older than that.
In 1913, in a speech at the California Club in Los Angeles, Culver announced his plans for what was to become Culver City. Local voters rejected the land's annexation to LA in 1914, whereupon Culver founded the Culver Investment Company. Supported by a 59-0 vote, Culver City became incorporated on September 20th, 1917, with a population of 530.
That's incredible. It seems so much older. And so, this gives some credence to my grandfather told me this. This might be an interesting tidbit about me. So my last name is Huntsberger.
Yeah.
My grandfather, I think it was his grandfather. So my grandfather was born in like 19... Oh, God, I don't remember. He 1922 or something like that. But his grandfather, I think, God, would it have been? I think it was his grandfather. Might have been his dad. Ugh. I think it was his grandfather had a hand in helping name Hermosa Beach and was like kind of a bigwig in Los Angeles. And when he died, the LA Times on the front had a big thing that said, Huntsberger dies. And my grandpa told me that. And I think he might have even seen that paper. And I thought, that's pretty cool. My grandfather grew up in Hancock Park, which is like the oldest and, you know, it's pretty wealthy part of town, which is always weird to hear something like that. We're like, wait a second. But he grew up on Lucerne. And then I, without knowing this, years later when I was living in Culver City, I moved and lived in a guest house in Hancock Park. And oddly, if you're trying to get a place to live in LA, look at those guest houses. It's the best.
Like, that's what
it's
I've heard.
It's really good.
I've heard that some of those guest houses are really nice and cheap.
It was so much cheaper than a studio, and I had a yard. I mean, it's basically like you have someone's garage. They turned it into but it had a pretty decent kitchen. I didn't have laundry. That was about it. There's not a lot of storage, but I had, a yard where I could have my dog hang out. And it's in this beautiful neighborhood behind this house where, like, you'd hear like birds chirping in the morning and no traffic. And when you wake up, you'd have this brief suspension of disbelief. Like, am I still in LA? Am I still in this hellhole? Or am I in this wonderful paradise? And then you go out into the city. But like, there's this little enclave there that I lived in. And I told my grandpa that, like, oh, I'm living on this street. I was living on like on Cahuenga or something like that. And my grandpa goes, huh, I don't think that's too far from where I grew up. I go, really? He goes, yeah, look up, what was the house number? It was somewhere on Lucerne. So I go, look over there. It's like a block and a half away.
Wow.
I'd never heard that I was from there. It was like my blood drew me back there. Like, this is where I'm
That's
from.
So weird.
Isn't that strange? It was pretty bizarre. And then, oh, here's the craziest thing.
Did you go knock on the door and be like, hi, excuse me, my grandfather was born and raised here.
I wish I were that type of person. I just can't. I'm too nervous. I'd feel really weird. But I walked by it, and as I'm walking by, I look at it, and I look down on the sidewalk. No bullshit. Someone had written into the concrete, David H. So I was like, well, this clearly happened within the last 20 years. It wasn't. But that's so odd to me. Like, it just felt like all these weird things kind of, like this odd synchronicity and coincidental sort of thing.
Isn't that weird? Like, how like stuff like that will happen?
It's very
strange. You're so perceived, or it's so coincidental, or whether it's karma or mysteries of the universe or parallel dimensions or lizard people or whatever.
Yeah.
How some coincidences are just like, hold on, this world is bananas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, something else is, like, I mean, that's obviously many explanations for that. I mean, David was a popular name back then. H is a popular letter.
Yeah.
It's it's clearly a logical, you know, Occam's razor or whatever they say, explanation for that.
Yeah.
Simplest explanation.
Isn't Jose the world's most common name? Or Muhammad is, I think.
Muhammad.
But Jose's up there, I think.
Jesus is up there, too. Like, Muhammad and, like, Jose and Jesus, I think.
And I think David and an H, like you say, they're up there.
I mean,
as
David's
well.
From the Bible. It's a religious name, you know what I mean? Like, So, I mean, it's clearly somebody else could have been named David H, but.
Yeah, so it's coincidentally,
weird.
People are like, well, the odds of that are actually pretty good. Yeah. But the odds that someone would write it into the sidewalk, a little more slim.
Yeah.
That they would do it in front of that house. Also odd. Yeah. So you start getting into
Did
like
Did you
these...
lift up the sidewalk and see if it was a passage anywhere?
I was knocking on trees and lifting up doormats.
You mentioned The Watchmen. Are you a comic book fan? Are you a comic fan or what
I like
you
this. I like this lady, Kathy Malkasian. That's about it. I like the Watchmen story, but you know, I liked Mouse. Like, I don't know if that counts as like a graphic novel, but I don't like when it looks too crisp.
Okay.
And most artwork now is just so slick.
So slick.
I like to see the work. I like to see people's hands in it. And so she draws these beautiful, and the stories are really creative and interesting. And she did Percy Gloom and Temperance, and those are the only two that I've read. Or then there's like a follow up to Percy Gloom as well. But like, so no, I'm not a graphic novel fan really. Other than those two,
were you growing up? Were you like a comic book fan growing up?
A lot of my friends were. I shouldn't say most of my friends. A lot of my friends were, and I would look at them, and I have a hard time with television shows where like adults are saying yes, Commander. it always makes me oh boy. And then as a kid, like there'd always be something where the bad guy or even the good guy would be looking over their shoulder, kind of grinning. And I would just be like, well, this is dumb. There'd be that jagged kind of like talk bubble coming out and say like, let's get him or whatever.
Yeah.
And just even as a kid, I was like, I don't love this. I don't know why it just didn't connect, which is strange because I love drawing. I like seeing drawings as well. So I don't know why it didn't resonate. But yeah, there's some disconnect there that I just never fully got into it.
Okay. Well, have you ever seen the movie The Phantom? Do you remember that movie? Billy Zane?
I haven't seen it, no. But
the only reason I bring that up is because the other day I was watching the movie The Phantom, and I remember I have a skull ring. It was Billy Zane. He was in like this big purple costume. And they ended up making a movie about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that great of a movie. But I was reading a bunch about it, and the first issue of The Phantom was in February of 1936. But what's interesting about this to me is the Phantom was the first fictional hero to wear a skin-tight costume, which became the hallmark subsequently for every single superhero costume.
Yeah, yeah.
He was first shown in a mask with no visible pupils, so he was the first superhero. I'm going to pull up a better picture of the Phantom here, but from 1936 here, he was the first superhero to wear skin tight tights and have a mask where you can't see any eyes, so it's just white. So like you look at Batman now and Spider-Man now and Deadpool and all these comic heroes, and they have like the mask on and all you see are like white. He was the first comic incarnation to do that, let alone wear skin tights.
Yeah.
Because before that, it was all pulp comics and pulp action adventure, and they always wore, like, detectives, and they always wore, like, you know, like the Indiana Jones types clothes and things like that.
Isn't that so strange to feel like that person or group of people, potentially one person was like, I like this. It's innovation. It's originality. And what you just said, very few people know that. And you don't even know the person's name who did it.
Yeah, because he's not... It didn't take off like the others.
But isn't that where everything comes from? Everyone starts using a drum beat, and that was, oh yeah, it came from some guy in wherever. Like,
yeah.
That guy, like that really was an innovative artistic breakthrough.
Yeah.
And we never celebrate them. We only know like, oh, the thing they made. And then you get to be an interesting person at dinner parties if you know that person's name.
Yeah.
And then the people that leave there go, oh, I forget the guy's name. But anyway, I heard a weird story about the person who initially created that design. And that feels frustrating that, like, I guess hopefully the person that made it enjoyed making it, because if it's about getting your respect, whew, they're definitely not.
Shout out to Lee Falk. Hey, Lee Falk, we remember you.
You get your respect from us, Lee.
Lee Falk was an American writer, theater director, and producer best known for as the creator of the popular comic strips The Phantom and Mandrake the Magician. At the height of their popularity, these strips attracted over 100 million readers every day.
Wow.
Can you imagine being like, I mean, back then that money was work for hire and he probably was died poor, but.
But if he was getting
100 million readers a day.
Imagine that bandwidth nowadays.
Yes. Like if you had 100 million people going on to look at your one thing today.
Yeah.
Like on Twitter, 100 million people looking at a tweet.
Yeah, you'd live in
a golden house.
Wow. Poor Lee. Isn't that just how it goes?
He wrote short stories and contributed to the series of pulp novels about the Phantom. A playwright and theatrical director, producer, Falk directed actors such as Marlon Brando, Charlton Heston, Paul Newman, Chico Marx, and Ethel Waiters. And that bananas, like,
yeah,
it's so like some of these people, like that's why people shit on Wikipedia, but some of Wikipedia blue links is some of my the most fun things to find out, because you do these weird trivias, then it's like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah,
and then you find out, oh wait, he's, do you know what I mean? Like you find out, oh, these people were roommates or whatever.
Yeah,
like, what?
Just that he had a cool life.
Yeah,
I mean, just that diversity of being around the arts and like,
yeah, like I'm sure he didn't hate life. I'm sure he wasn't poor, but yeah, it's still like.
Yeah, that's what I say. Like, I hope he just enjoyed it. Because when you hear those stories and then you look and go, like, that Tesla died broke, is you can't stomach that.
No.
Like, this can't happen in the world.
How,
and I know there are worse travesties than that that have been perpetuated endlessly. However, Tesla's a shitty one. Like, and to know that someone like Lee Falk, like, he could just, shrug it off and be like, that's okay. They didn't, celebrate me for inventing tights on a superhero. I can live with that.
Yeah.
It's not the worst thing to ever happen to a human.
I just and how did you get your money, sir?
Well, my grandfather invented tights on the superhero.
And, the pupils also that.
So that was interesting to me. I thought that was neat. Here's another thing. Are you into Star Trek? Are you into anything like that?
I like the new movies.
Yeah?
And I like when people that are really into the old series tell me about them. And then I go, oh, that's a cool idea.
Yeah.
And there's some, multiple worlds and different civilizations.
Let me ask you this. How did you have a show on the Sci-Fi Network?
It's a good question because I'm kidding.
I'm half joking, but I'm also because like in this day and age, everybody wants like I've lost so many things because they were like you weren't authentic enough, and it's like do you know what I mean? Like I'm very not authentic to like the nerd realm, but I like everything. Like I am, but I'm not. Do you know what I mean?
We're probably the same in that regard.
Yeah,
because I
love everything, but it's like.
I haven't seen Battlestar Galactica.
It's really good.
I want to see it.
If you want to waste 3 weeks of your life, just binge watch that because it's so good.
All right. It's one of those things, even Doctor Who, I like the premise of, but I've never been able to sit down and like just plow
through
really
it. That's really good too.
Too daunting. It's too many. Where do you jump in? And people would come to my stand-up show. This happened once where a girl dressed as the Doctor and I was like.
Which one?
I don't know, long trench coat, hat, glasses. Like,
oh, them. Oh, all of them.
Yeah. She didn't, if she had one picked out, like if she had a mole on her face or something that I wasn't picking up on. But, but she came as like.
Oh, the mole doctor.
I felt so bad. Like, oh yeah, people kind of associate that with me. A lot of my stand-up's kind of science fiction-y and I really love all those things. I love multiple worlds. I love the Twilight Zone. That was probably like
Holy
my go-to.
Shit, dude. So good.
It's
What's
really
your favorite
fantastic.
Twilight Zone?
I like the Burgess Meredith one where he's the reader guy and then he goes
Time Enough at Last?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
one of the better ones. That's one of the best ones. That's one of my favorite ones where he's the bank teller and he always wants to read and he gets shit on for wanting to read all the time and escaping the world. And then the apocalypse happens and then he comes up from upstairs and
he's got access to all the books.
All the books. And then he sits on his glasses and he can't read anymore. Spoiler alert, but it's like 50 to 60 years
old.
It
is a bummer. Yeah. I can't believe you know the name of it. Like you have a running catalog of all the episodes.
Some of the good ones.
That's incredible because like, if you started telling me the plot to them, I'd go, oh, yeah, I know that one. But I certainly wouldn't go like, oh, yeah, that's episode 4 of season 2.
Well, I mean, I don't know them all, but like Time Enough at Last is the main one. And then there's To Serve Man, but that was also the name of the cookbook. So that wasn't exactly the, you know, like everybody should know that because it's that was the one where the aliens come down and they're like, oh, we're going to teach you how to do everything amazing. Mm-hmm. We're going to teach you how to make cool shit and how to eat lots of food and we're going to solve hunger. All these these aliens are like, we're going to teach you how to serve hunger and save hunger, and you're going to eat a lot of food and you're going to get nice and strong. And then we're going to take you to a better place. But what it was is in this book, they kept walking around, the aliens kept walking around with this book, and it had like this alien inscription on it. And they kept like, it was like their alien type of book. I don't know if you've seen this episode, but it's really good, and I'm going to spoil it for you. But
okay,
is, so they start ushering all these people that are willingly going on to this alien ship, and a couple of these people are hesitant. And what they find out is the book that they're carrying around. It says to serve man, and they're thinking like, oh yeah, they're serving man, they're helping us out. Uh-huh. But once they read further, they find out it's to serve man, as in it's a cookbook.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like the aliens were just fattening up everybody so they could eat them.
Ah, bless.
That's
bless
one of the really good ones too.
Rod Sterling, the best. So to answer your question, yes. I mean, because it is, I would say as we got further and further into the show, am I the right guy for this? And they'd be like, yeah, dude, it doesn't matter. You don't have to be that knowledgeable. Like, it's more about the jokes and stuff. And that's how I got I auditioned for it. And not that enthusiastically.
Oh, really? It wasn't your show?
No, I didn't create it. It wasn't my show. I just auditioned for it. And wasn't that, I thought, I don't know how psyched I am to host a clip show, really. Yeah. You know, I like doing stand-up, and this feels. But then I went in, and I just riffed, and I had written some of the jokes to some of the material. And I was like, can I do some of my own jokes? Like, yeah, please. So I did, and then that got me not just a callback, I got to go test for it. So dress up in the whole outfit and be there live in front of an audience. And I just had a good rapport with the producers. I really liked those guys and was just pretty loose and fun with it and like just tried to be funny. And you forget, like, as a comedian, that's probably the best thing to do. Yeah. You can't like just revert back to that, like, stop taking just shit seriously. Funny, like, just be funny about it. And so
funny's
I really
money,
like.
As they say.
Oh, that's what I always say. I liked the jokes and I liked doing it. And so afterward, like, you know, the post production guy, editor dude came up to me and was like, yeah, the producers were showing everyone around, like, they'd go show two or three people's clips and we all chose you. You know, you had your jokes and your style were the best. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. Like that, because in my head, I thought, I know five or six other comedians who know all this shit, who've like seen all these shows. But the producers, I was just lucky that like the EPs were mostly like, dude, that's not an imperative thing.
Yeah.
Like, but to the average fan, people on Twitter and stuff are like, you've never seen, oh my God.
Isn't that a thing?
Like, oh, totally. Yeah.
It's like the nerd community, like the nerd, like everybody.
Yeah.
Is like even, you know, even actors, normal, cool, good, talented actors will get cast in roles of like nerd, you know, genre. And then they're like, oh, I haven't seen it. And it's like people shit on them for it. And it's like, well, there's a lot of stuff to read and continue to bring in.
Yeah.
I've seen most of it because I do like a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot I haven't seen and a lot I don't know about, but I enjoy what I do watch. And it's always a funny thing to see how much like kind of outrage that there is because they want that.
It's incredible.
They want that authenticism.
Yeah, one of us. You've got to belong to that group. And I thought that was really going to Comic-Con was eye-opening because like there are two sides. Like we're the nerds. We're the oppressed people. We like comic books. Oh, you like the most popular thing in the world? The movies that gross $1 billion? Yeah. You like those things?
You
counterculture rebel you.
Yeah.
So I thought that was horse shit. But then on the other side, when you go to see Comic-Con and how commercialized everything is and everyone just minimizes quote-unquote the nerds by like saying they actually made his tights the wrong color and they're right to be that angry. Yeah. That was their thing. And then you know,
guys commercialized that.
They commercialized the shit out of it and they go, you're lucky. You got what you wanted. Like, not really. We liked it when it was in our imagination and we could gather
somewhere. Didn't get what we wanted. We got a distilled version to make it available in four quadrants.
Yeah. So then that made me mad at nerds because like they should be angry. They should be more fired up and they shouldn't be – when they show up there – to Comic-Con, and it's really like a very friendly place. I think everyone associates it with like...
And they put hard effort into their costumes.
And that's the best thing is they can't wait so positive to each other. Like, how'd you make that? What is that? Is that from season two? Yeah, I could tell because like they're so celebratory
of each other. I used the top of a soda bottle and I spray painted it blue.
Yeah. How many hours? Oh, this took me 6 hours a week for the last 3 years. Like, and what are you going to do for the next one? Oh, I've already started on it. I'm doing a whole thing. Like, It's incredible.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's really neat. I love that, and I liked being a part of it. And if they were to say, you know, like, you don't belong here, I'd be like, that's fair.
Yeah.
But I hope you, like, it's inclusive enough for, like, you're welcome here. You're allowed to come and, like, comment on it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the show originally had been, like, the Wil Wheaton Project, which I didn't even know. So people would be like, oh, is it like the Wil Wheaton show? And I'd be like, I guess. I don't know what that is. And then he sent a tweet before the show started, like, hey, good luck, man, which I thought was very nice of him.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of worried, almost like when Steve Carell didn't really watch Ricky Gervais in the original Office. Because, like, I don't want to see. So I went and watched just a little bit of that show, and I was like, oh, he's the better guy for that. Like,
yeah.
He's so knowledgeable.
His was on Sci-Fi too, right?
Yeah.
And then they canceled it.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a whole different regime, and I would only hear tangentially, like, what had happened and all that stuff. But I thought it was really interesting, and like, and he did seem like he's so knowledgeable. I mean, he's like the king of that sort of culture.
He's great. He's a great dude. He's super funny.
Yeah, he seems like a genuinely cool guy. And so anyway, I just felt like it was a strange world to be thrust into. But as a comedian, and especially like, you know, getting that sort of opportunity, well, I'm not going to turn this down.
No way, not at all.
Yeah, so that was pretty neat to like be a part of that. And then, you know, going through seeing that whole corporate world and all that stuff was really interesting. Like seeing television kind of behind the scenes and all the metrics and branding and all the ways they're trying and failing to just put a product. And that's why podcasts are the best. You just make it, you put it out there, and if people like it, terrific.
Yeah.
And you know, so we had pretty good success with Professor Blastoff. If someone were to be asked, like, how'd you go about your branding? I think it would just be hilarious. It would be like, oh, we didn't do anything. We just made it. We just recorded it, and that's it. We didn't really put any thought into anything beyond that. And so, you know, comics have to do that now. Like, how are we doing our launch campaign? And sometimes you see something like Pokemon Go, where, like, that was years
Holy
in the
cow.
Making and couldn't be more successful.
Couldn't be more successful.
Yeah.
You got people who've never played Pokemon. I mean, I've never played Pokemon, and I'm thinking about downloading it, but I'm not, only because I would be addicted to it. Like, I know I would.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I'm the same way.
But you have, like, 50-year-old, like, I was getting my haircut at the Sherman Oaks Galleria, and there were, like, these 50-year-old women walking around, like, oh, look, there's one of those things. Like, they're playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a carrier like T-Mobile is offering free Pokemon Go data for a year, that's a thing.
Well, and everyone you talk to is like, oh, it's the best. It's gotten me out of the house.
Yeah.
It gets you interacting with people because you see someone and go, Pokemon?
Yeah.
And they go, yeah.
It gets you falling off cliffs.
It gets you falling off cliffs and
finding dead bodies and getting mugged in parks.
Pedophiles hanging out with children more.
Right?
Terrific. What? This is insanity. Like, it's chaos happening.
It's such a chaos. There's guys, there are groups of people who are dropping these things called lures and getting groups of people to come with their Pokemon Goes, and they pull out guns and steal their phones.
No way.
Yes, that's happened. People
have
been like,
oh, my God.
That's amazing. Like,
people,
that's genius.
People catching them in, like, Holocaust museums.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just pandemonium
now. It's wild. Like, I don't know what algorithm puts the Pokemon in these locations, but I feel like they probably should have, like, somehow put no museums, no, like, sex shops.
They'll work out those kinks.
Yeah.
What I found baffling was the amount of apps that people wrote and offered to the world within hours. Just to take advantage of it. Just to, like, oh, this actually clicks and goes to a porn site, or it hides on your phone and knows your location.
Yeah.
So those lure type things and stuff like that. It's incredible that someone could just write that up, like, okay, this happened, write a bunch of code,
it's all
have it functional.
Or whatever. Yeah.
It's unreal. I mean, I can't, the level of intelligence it takes to be that sinister, or maybe they have that Craig Cobb mindset of, like, oh, let's just more entropy, more chaos, more just in the world.
It's like that Mr. Robot, you know? But it is interesting how fast people can turn products out when they, like, after something's a success. Like, how fast they can write some of these codes or these viruses where it's like, it's like one of those things too where it's like, well, if you're that fast, you could be benefiting so much more. You could benefit the human race so much more.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then again, it is that of just like, hey, let's stand on this roof and throw water balloons at people.
Yeah.
Because that's fun. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I get it to an extent, I guess.
I do too, yeah. I feel the same way where, like, I get it. It sucks. I mean, I wish they would. You'd like to think that the default setting for everyone is like, oh, well, I'm going to use this for good. But no. Some people are just like, oh, I recognize the world. It's all nonsense. Like, it's
I mean, it is. It's It's such a like I'm definitely for the advancement of the human race and technology, and I want to see, you know, I'd love to see intergalactic travel. I'm not going to, or inter, you know, spatial travel.
Well, not with that attitude.
I might see interplanetary travel if I can live another 40 years and, mm-hmm. and not get hit by a vehicle. But I definitely want like world peace, and I definitely want all that. But mm-hmm. I also acknowledge the fact that all the nations in the world are corrupt and bought out by governments and money and corporations, to where it's like, it is nonsense. Like, just get along, guys. Like, yeah. All these wars and everything going on is like, just why? Like, what is that? Like, do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean?
All
like,
these wars and this, what is that?
Do you know what I mean? No, yeah, like, or absolutely. Even like these viruses on like phones. It's like, what? What does that solve? Nothing. It doesn't do anything.
No.
Use your intelligence, you know, put that effort into making yourself way more money, or be, you know, bettering, or I don't know.
The nihilistic approach makes sense on that level, because you just go, why? What, yeah. If we are a simulation, it's written very cleverly because it gives us all these things to complain about, to think yeah. about, to talk about, to try to change, to pursue. We're not just sitting around like, yeah, everyone's got everything figured out. There's no war or poverty or starvation, racism. We got it. They touch on that a little bit in The Matrix. Like, yeah. Oh, we gave you the perfect world, and then it didn't go well. Like,
yeah.
You guys need all this shit because it keeps you, like, active and frustrated and all these human emotions engaged. And it's disgusting to watch. And when you're a part of it, you're like, it is gross. Like, it would be way better if we didn't have all this stuff. And yet we seem to just keep perpetuating it endlessly, the same sort of patterns over and over. It does seem like, yeah, let's just go throw water balloons.
Right.
Or let's just go hide in a cave somewhere and just get yeah. away from it.
Wow. But what I was going to add with Star Trek, I asked you about that, is because this was news to me. I feel like maybe I read this years ago and I forgot, but Lucille Ball, mm-hmm. her production company, Desilu Productions, was one of the believers and one of the main producers of the original Star Trek.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And they were like, they it was between that. She also did like Mission Impossible, Mannix, and she obviously did the Lucy show.
Man, but, you know what's – sorry to jump in there, oh, yeah. but – things that perpetuate themselves again and again of if just listening to people talk in the last couple of years about the state of Hollywood, you would think like, God, women really have never had a chance. And you hear about someone like so long ago that was dominating, that
dominating.
Was at the top of everything. You're like, oh, it has happened.
And happened.
We've backslid quite a bit, and it's nice to see like this reminder, this constant, yeah. like that, you know, I just watched Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Have you seen that?
Okay. I've heard good things about it. I haven't seen it. It's on the CW. It's one, I believe it's either won Emmys or Golden Globes. It's one of them. But.
Yeah. And it's just doing a good job of incorporating different sexualities, different yeah. genders, different races into roles and places where they're not even addressed. It's like, yeah, that person is that. They're the heartthrob. They're the CEO. They're the stupid person. And you won't know what sexuality or race they are. They're just a person. And so it's night, but it seems crazy that it took work to get there, because you start at like Lucille Ball and go, oh, that's where the baseline should have been.
Yeah.
How did it backslide from there so far? It's really yeah. strange.
Yeah. Like I'm reading here on which website is this? The Huffington Post. It's from a couple years ago, but it's about it was when she was inducted into a Hall of Fame or whatever. And her daughter recounts the story of these studio chiefs when they were in the height of making and producing their shows. Some of them were like losing money or whatever, and the studio heads came to Lucille Ball and were like, Mission Impossible and Star Trek are way too expensive shows to be producing and making and putting out for mm-hmm. the amount of viewers there are. And she's like, no, I like them. And they did that. And now you look at it and we have Mission Possible movie franchises that are
yeah.
making billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And you have the Star Trek universe that is just such an iconic, you know, if it wasn't for Star Trek, we arguably wouldn't have Star Wars, and we wouldn't have, mm-hmm. you know, all of this. We wouldn't have Battlestar Galactica and all that. And it's,
yeah.
it's really interesting. It goes back to like that Lee Falk guy who did The Phantom, you know?
Yeah.
You have these people like Lucille Ball that people aren't, you know, who helped open the door for these people.
Yeah.
You know, Gene Roddenberry wouldn't have had a place to make Star Trek if it wasn't for somebody giving him a chance, or vice versa.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have all these people behind the scenes, and it's like nobody really, you don't really think about it.
Do you think
it takes so much to get things made?
And absolutely.
So many, like we were talking about earlier before we started recording, and there's always people say yay or nay, and there's so many people that say nay, but every now and then you'll get a few people that say yay.
Mm-hmm. In the right order. I mean, being a part of that as a show that went forward, you know, like thinking of the amount of work that went into it before I got brought on board. And then after that, it was still almost a year before it was like, all right, we're going to start recording these soon. And up until that point, it was just like, well, here's the next phase, a lot of waiting around. But we've locked in that, you know, these components are there. So to keep getting these yeses, to do something that in no way like reinvented the wheel or split the atom, it was just a show, you know. And so to think how hard it must be to do something innovative, monumentally, like 10 times harder, a million times harder. And then I wonder, like, is it an explosion point? Were there 50 people that had that idea and one of them got through? Or was it that one person just banging against the door? And then it's this explosion because it works. Now 50 people show up and capitalize on it and go, oh, I also made grunge music. I also made rock and roll. I also made whatever, you know, like these things that someone was kind of an innovator or some people were. I guess we'll never know.
It's well, you know, and there's so much parallel thinking just in general of talent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the television was invented at the same time, similarly, different types of mechanisms, but the concept of it was invented, you know, on two sides of the globe. Mm-hmm. So it's like, or with like these shows, it's like, we just bought one just like this. And it's like, wow, because there's a finite amount of ideas, but it's a matter of putting a cool spin on it.
Is that, I mean, you think of these, like, if it is a simulation and you want to speed it up.
You've said that a couple times and I agree, but like my brother and I have had many, many conversations about life and everything just being us living in the Matrix as it is.
Like some sort of program that like you sprinkle in a Da Vinci or an Einstein and it clicks it forward quite a bit. Like, all right, we're sick of watching you guys beat each other with sticks. Like, let's go forward just a notch. And then you put in these figures.
Yeah.
And so someone introduces the concept of multiple worlds or time travel or whatever. And everyone collectively around the planet goes, holy shit, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But now we're locked in all these superhero movies where we're beating each other with sticks over and over in the same way. There's always a gleaming blue cube thing. There's always, you know, we haven't figured out what the next thing is. Yeah. Like, and someone's going to have that thought.
Well, that's why they clicked on the Elon Musk program and they dumped him on the planet.
Maybe. I think he is. But his innovations so far have been fascinating. But they're still from science fiction and things that were proposed long
ago.
So there's nothing that's been like, oh, shit, have you heard this idea for a show? You can't even wrap your mind around it.
Yeah.
Then everyone else would capitalize on it and every movie would be about that going forward.
Yeah, even in entertainment, it's interesting how, or even in like music, there was like hair bands, and then all of a sudden, there's like 1,000 different shitty hair bands, and I love shitty hair bands. But it's funny how like you'll have one hit TV show, like one TV show will creep in, and then all of a sudden, like there'll be like 5 other shows on different networks trying to be like Lost or trying to merge Lost with like a Spy or trying to and they're trying to take little things and play catch up to all of this. Well, this is trending well. Mm-hmm. Let's make it a superhero run. However, do you watch Mr. Robot?
Yeah, I don't like it.
You don't like it?
I think it's just a lazy Fight Club kind of ripoff with
Dexter
sprinkled in.
Have you watched the whole season?
I watched all of season one and I really liked it initially and then it just was like diminishing returns.
Okay, here's the deal. I haven't watched any of it yet. Have you? Have you watched any of it, Aristotle? No. Okay. Well, it's been out for a year and a half.
Yeah.
I haven't watched the new season yet.
Uh-huh.
But there are theories online, if you think about what you've seen, of it being like a Quantum Leap time travel show.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Asian girl, White Rose or whatever, who's actually a dude dressed as a girl, tells the guy, you hack people, I hack time.
Uh-huh.
And there's countless mentions to Back to the Future 2 and like things like that. And the Scottish guy, like they both have foreign last names. And there's theories that Terrence Welick, the tall dude, the tall pretty dude with the Scandinavian wife or whatever, and they had the kid. That those are actually his parents because they talk about how they've had a kid before and that they just had a baby boy. And that's actually him, and that he's actually his dad going back in time because he's trying to right the wrongs that have happened. So, I mean, start watching this season because it could be if that theory plays out, that's going to be way better than the first season because I agree, it was very Fight Club-y. I enjoyed
it,
but it was
like when someone did wrong and now I've righted that wrong by hacking into their life and
ruining their life.
Yeah, like that just got to be a bit old. And I thought there was that one scene where like the drug trip, which was very like kind of David Lynch, weird, trippy. I liked that. I thought this isn't on TV a lot, especially on USA Network. That was pretty unique. So maybe I will give it a shot for season two, but I...
Yeah.
Those two things like just kept appearing so much where it wasn't an homage anymore. It just felt like this is really direct from those two things.
I enjoyed it because I binge watched it, so it was very like one and done. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. It was very Fight Club-y, but I'm hoping the second season really delves into what all of these theories are, because then it would make it even better to me. It would really amplify it by making it like a time travel hack type of a show.
Isn't that where they repeat and loop? But like Lost, isn't that where it kind of lost everyone? Be so punsy there, but like you get too many things.
Questions. Yeah, many things.
You have to know. I mean, Looper did a great job.
Looper was great.
It's a movie, and it's pretty limited in time, so you can't just perpetually do more seasons.
Yeah.
You know,
if you
all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, but and people go back and they watch things again, and then it all unravels, and you go like, oh, well, this has just gotten out of hand.
Yeah, Lost unveiled way too many questions and too many connections, and they didn't have an end goal. They didn't know what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
But supposedly Mr. Robot was originally supposed to be like a movie or two, I think. Mm-hmm. And then they transformed it into a show, so I'm hoping they keep it like a finite number of seasons, because I also don't like watching shows for 9 seasons. Game of Thrones, I love Game of Thrones, but there are some shows where it's like they just keep adding more story, and it's
stories
should be ending. Like, you should have a finite amount of time and ending.
5 or 6 seasons is pretty terrific.
It's a good terrific for a good show, I think. Because especially like if it's like 10 episodes a season, like that's 50 hours,
uh-huh.
You can tell a good novel story.
Yeah. Did you – Vine and Melrose, there's a billboard for Mr. Robot season 2, and someone got up there, blank face got up there, and spray painted out the face and then wrote blank face. But when you see it for the first time, you're like, is that their marketing? It fits it really well. It looks like chaos and anarchy. And then you see the billboard in a regular style and you go, oh, no, that was someone named Blankface. So I thought, like, good for you, Blankface. It really fits it, though.
Shout out to Blankface. Whoever you are, if you're listening, Blankface.
Yeah, bless your heart. Really well done.
That's another thing, though, is like people who do that, like Blankface.
Mm-hmm.
What is that going to get you, blank face?
Maybe
are you trying
something.
To be like Banksy, or are you going to do you got merchandise to sell? How are you making money, blank face, with people knowing who you are?
I like, for me, there's a suspension of disbelief in that there are lizard people, and then there are the people who know. And blank face is clawing at the door, trying to show people like this show is just a corporation trying to make money.
Yeah.
It is owned, you know, it's USA Network, which is owned by who, I don't know, Viacom, NBC Universal.
Somebody.
There's someone big, like, owns them. Comcast, the cable giant, owns them. And so the idea that they're producing subversive material, Blankface is maybe saying, like, dudes, this is part of it. This is the same thing. That's how I like to think, that Blankface is our true hero.
I think they're the parent company. They own... That they own AMC, IFC, Wii TV, BBC America, Sundance TV, AMC Networks Incorporated.
Comcast does?
AMC does. So, I mean, I'm sure AMC is owned by somebody, but according to Wikipedia, it just says AMC Networks.
Because last year at the Sharknado party, I saw that whole Mr. Robot crew there. They were down at Comic-Con for that. Lovely group, like Christian Slater. I like, think the kid's good. And the writer, the guy who created it, like it's really a phenomenal achievement. Like to have your vision in sort of a Vince Gilligan way.
Oh,
like, you know, all right, go,
people
do
enjoy
it, man.
They let you do what you want.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And blank face paints on your billboards.
I hope you're right. I hope season 2 kind of moves away a little bit from those things that we're like, this has been done and this doesn't feel like that original. I do like how they make coding, you know, look realistic.
Yeah.
Have you watched Humans at all?
No.
Oh, it's so good.
Is it?
It's really good.
Is that with the lizard people? Because there was one show about lizard people, right?
No, it's not about lizard people.
No.
Like, there's the one with like Humans is just about synthetics and AI. In a world. And it's funny, like, I had this show idea that was a comedy, but very similar. And then I was watching it, and I was like, oh, this is really good, though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I guess you still could make a comedy version of it, but it's just a world, and they never really specify the year or even if we're in the same dimension or galaxy. It's just, here's London, and it's people still drive cars, but everyone has a companion robot or a helper robot called a synth.
Okay.
And the show is about that, but they're meant to be like in the Asimov style of they don't really have consciousness.
Okay.
And then some conscious robots start getting introduced in, and now it's kind of chaos of
who's
people.
Who?
Yeah, trying
some
to figure
Blade
out
Runner-y.
A little bit. Yeah, but there are, you know, all the players at hand, and you know like who's trying to help them and or stop them from gaining their freedom. You know, so there's a human aspect to that. Like, wait, they think they're humans. And like, nah, they're robots. Like, yeah, but they have conversations. So it brings up a lot of those discussions, but it's very like, it's not on the nose at all. It's very subtle with everything. So check out Humans. It's
David, let me ask you this. Are you here to push robot propaganda?
Yeah.
Could
you shut them down?
No. If I knew you were secretly a robot, mm-hmm. and you were like, I have a consciousness, to just shut you down.
I right now lift my shirt. I show you a plug-in.
It can be like,
and then a circuit board in the back of my head, and a button back there. You couldn't shut me down?
No, because in the end, what are we anyways?
Mm-hmm.
But robots. What are humans in the sense of you look out the real world and we're tied to our phones and we buy and sell goods and services and we run through the motions of everyday life anyways.
Yeah.
We're robots to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, that's a sad outlook on life. But
someone's gonna have an album titled that.
But it's like if someone's like, you know, it's like again Blade Runner, where it's like you're interacting with these people who seem to have their own emotions and they get sad and they get happy, but then they're a robot and they're not real. Who's to say that's not what's real? What's not real?
Yeah. I just did a podcast last night where they talked about AI and we had some version of this kind of same conversation, but you know, we pride ourselves in like, we're biological, like whatever this consciousness is, but we don't want to think that it's just materialism. Like, oh, this isn't a byproduct of evolution and just brain chemistry and molecules. No. There might be a soul that inhabits me. There might be something more to me than this. But if that same thing happened artificially, we couldn't have it. Like, that's not true consciousness.
Would you, because I'd like to think that I would in a heartbeat. Probably would. I probably would sign. If you could put your consciousness and you could take David Huntsberger right here.
I wouldn't do it.
And put you into a robot body that looks just like you, it's a robot, and you'll never get sick. You can run faster, jump higher. You can still have sex and do all that fun stuff, but it's just a robot.
Yeah.
Would you do that?
No, and I've been doing most of my stand-up lately about versions of that, of the idea of like multiple worlds and just this being an existence and kind of buying into that is sort of an ethos a little bit. Like I think staying here is holding onto it too tight. Like this is the only world I've ever known. This must be the only one. It's either going to be darkness at the end and nothingness, which why would you have to fear that? But it would be a bummer to be like, oh, well, if the universe is just this thing happening and you can have eyes and experience it for a bit, why wouldn't you want to just prolong that endlessly?
Right.
So there is that compulsion there to be like, I could climb Everest as that robot. Yeah. I could dive down to the bottom of the Mariana Trench.
See what life is going to be like in 100 years.
Yeah, I could watch
years,
all of
500
it.
Years.
But then, say my family members pass away, my pets all pass away, friends of mine all move away and pass away, and you start losing the connectivity of being a human and realize like, oh, it's so transient. When you know, seeing death makes you hold on a little tighter, and I think if you never saw that, you just, it's not so bad that I only see you once a year or once every 50 years.
So you don't want to make new friends with other robots?
I think you would go a little bit
So you like
insane.
Robots, but you don't want to make friends with robots?
Do you ever go to a party and you're like, I'm going to have new conversations and talk about
all the time,
it's
all the time,
fucking
all
brutal. Yeah, it's horrible. So endlessly doing that, I think you would just stop having friends.
So you just go on a trip on your own, but
yeah.
It's definitely an interesting thing because it's like, I'm very curious for what the future brings, but I also, again, you know, do you want to be the oldest person at a party? Do you know what I mean? Do you want to have to always make new younger friends or new friends because your family and friends are dying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And so here the same, you know, if you're older than them and they're getting new thoughts to process, you couldn't even relate to people. It's like when you hear teenagers talking about, but what if? And you're like, I had those same thoughts when I was that age.
300 years ago.
Yeah, that was 300 years to me. I cannot entertain this notion at all. I got to walk away.
Yeah.
So then you're this curmudgeon-y, rude, old shithead and people ostracize you. And I just don't see the benefit of being alive for that long. It's already – I mean, it's exhausting.
The only benefit for me would be to travel and see every place I want to go to.
True.
And maybe travel to Mars and travel – like by then, like travel, leave this planet.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's definitely something – at some point you'd be like living forever would be boring at some point.
I mean, there are parts of me that think that if this world is just a visitation, like, you know, like I'm sure the Twilight Zone has had versions of that. where you finish and you're in some sort of a middle world or an afterworld, and the things you run into would go, "Hey, Razzle, did you go see the top of Everest?" You go, "No." They, "Oh, man, did you go check out? There's this little island near Fiji." And you go, "No." They go, "What'd you do while you were there?" Like, "Well, it was hard. So I had to work a lot. I had to pay bills." And they go, "Oh, dude, you fucked it up. Like, you were supposed to just rob a bunch of banks and then go see all this shit and get out of there."
Yeah.
You're like, I blanked out. I forgot.
Yeah.
When you're there, it seems so real. And you don't realize, like, it is this big ass playground that you're supposed to go see all of it and check it out and then go, "All right, saw it. Let's go see the next world."
I mean, there's something to be said about that. I mean, there's something to be said about traveling and seeing this amazing planet that we live on. And there's also something to be said about, you know, are there parallel worlds? You know, like, it's such a, you know, it's one of those conversations where it's like, what the meaning of life? What is it?
Right.
Is it rinse and repeat and have kids and 9 to 5, or is it robbing banks and seeing the world? Who knows?
Who knows, man? Because when you watch Welcome to Leith, and you're like, they're just going to spend their whole existence in this little town of 24 people in North Dakota.
Yeah.
That's cold and flat. You don't even get, like, great bodies of water or mountains. You have the scenery. It never changes.
Yeah.
But if you like it and it's pretty to you,
there you go.
You, in the end, people go, do you see that cave? No. What'd you see? I saw Leith. My whole existence, I saw this one little place.
Hey, I got a great story about a guy named Chris Cobb. You got to hear it. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having
me. Now it's your show. Where can everybody find you on the internet? What do you got?
DavidHuntsberger.com has links to Twitter and all those sorts of things. And then my podcast is on there as well, Space Cave. And what else? Do some stand-up shows from time to time. I don't know when this comes out.
Come out on Monday.
Okay, so Tuesday, tomorrow night in Los Angeles, I'll be doing a longer set at the Virgil with some funny people, friends of mine. And then I do a monthly show called The Junk Show, which you should come do sometime.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Your photos, I see you post the ads for it, and it's always like cool art.
It's a bunch of volunteers. Like this girl, Angela Vasquez, just likes the show, and her band has played at it a couple times. And so she's a really great graphic designer, and people just show up and help with the show,
which is
great. So it's a nice little community. It's fun. And it really just is supposed to sort of celebrate how creative Los Angeles is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so we have filmmakers and writers read stories and magicians and musicians and a lot of stand up and animation and stuff like that. So that's a fun show. I like to just watch it. So that's the second Sunday of every month at the Copper Still. There are links to that, I'm sure, as well on my website. So everything's at DavidHuntsberger.com. I have CDs on iTunes. I have a stand-up sort of animated special that's available as well. So all kinds of crap that I've made over the years.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Everybody go do that. Follow him on Twitter, Instagram. Follow those. Go see those shows. Buy his shit. Buy his stuff and support. Support cool things, guys.
Yeah, support the arts.
Hey, guys, why don't you support cool things? Support cool things. Thank you so much. As usual, you guys can follow us on Twitter at TWL Podcast. Shoot us an email at todaywelearnpodcast@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook, Today We Learn with Razzle and Dan. You can follow me on Instagram at My Name is Razzle. Follow me on Twitter at My Name is Razzle too. Do all those things. Continue liking us on Facebook and giving us good reviews on iTunes and all of that. Help us climb those charts. And hopefully, you know, cross your fingers for some good things that we got in the works with this show. And as always, welcome to Leith. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, David.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.